This podcast is presented by Pacific Office Automation, proud partner of the Arizona Cardinals. Learn more at pacificoffice.com.
Into the end zone for the touchdown. Hollywood Brown has been spectacular. Connor to the five and into the end zone for the touchdown.
Welcome to Cardinals Underground, presented by Pacific Office Automation. Visit pacificoffice.com. Problem solved.
Touchdown, Kyler Murray. That defender is in multiple pieces.
Oh, that was nasty right there, right?
The latest news and notes from the insiders who cover the team.
Drilled by Simmons. Isaiah Simmons is balling.
Bring it on, bring it on.
Slammed to the ground by Buda Baker. Like a torpedo, he came flying into the backfield.
I ain't scared of nobody.
Here's Paul Calvisi.
You know, you think you know a guy. You think you can watch all the game film and, you know, if there was really a combine and or a pro day for a media member, you think you really know someone, Danny? And then the day comes along where all of a sudden there's a curveball out of left field, or in this case, a T-shirt rocked by Danny Surak that just makes you think twice about a guy. I honestly didn't know that Darren Urban had it in him, Danny Surak, as you're going to have to use your imagination on this one, but you're wearing a T-shirt. Take it from there, Danny. What exactly are you wearing?
I am. I was gifted a T-shirt earlier this morning.
Okay.
By none other than Darren Urban.
So this is like breaking news.
Yes.
Same day stuff. Okay.
To commemorate our trip to the Combine this year. So backstory, my T-shirt, I guess I'll start with that, is a very nice material. And the picture front and center, nice and large, is actually high quality.
I wanted to make sure that it was a T-shirt that was worth wearing.
It is worth wearing. So the picture is our crew, most of our crew, at least that was there the whole week for the Combine. So it's myself, it's Grayson Choi, one of our videographer producers, Kyle Deroney with the same title, and Darren Urban. And we are sitting at a table at our favorite local pub that we have spent many hours the last 2 years combined, and we are taking a drink together in this photo to commemorate. It's our very first drink of the trip, and so it's the four of us at a table, and Darren surprised all of us with T-shirts this morning like the kind-hearted person he is.
A couple things there. One, it was deep into the evening of the first evening. It was not during working hours. Let's make that very clear.
All right. You look pretty sober in there. Everyone has a nice big smile. No one's like
It was actually a good one of the reasons I wanted to do it was like one of the best phone pictures I've ever seen.
Should I take a picture and put it on my Twitter so people can see it?
Go.
Maybe I'll do that.
I would also say that I'd rather not have my wife see how much I spent on those four T-shirts because it was more than I thought it was going to be.
You kind of look almost like you're in a ski lodge because Danny has the knit cap on. Like if I wouldn't have known the context, I would think like Danny's like a professional snowboarder or something.
Ooh.
She's got or skateboarder. She's got the knit cap on. And
yeah, I've got my beanie on.
Okay. All right. There you go. Once again, I didn't know Darren had it in him to be quite so thoughtful. Just when you thought,
well, thank you, Paul.
He was a hardened veteran, a grizzled media member of all these years, and then boom, out of nowhere, I mean, just the resourcefulness of it all, the thoughtfulness of it all.
I've said it once, and I'll say it again. Darren is actually more fun than you might expect.
That's great.
And I stand by that statement.
You have said that multiple times, and every time it sounds like the most backhanded compliment you
I
can give.
I know it does, and I don't mean it to sound that way.
Last thing, and we'll move on here because there's plenty to discuss on Cardinals Underground, brought to you by Pacific Office Automation, but is it cause and effect based on what Darren's holding in his hand? And that is something that looks to be pretty high-proof alcohol. Is that what you're saying, Danny? Does it take, how many of those does it take for Darren to become that fun guy you speak of?
No, Darren was fun before we had some alcohol.
A beverage, all right.
Off, you know, after work,
after work
hours.
After work hours.
After work hours.
Okay.
Well, like you said, it was the first drink of the night.
It was.
Right. So, there you go. Can we drink to the latest mock drafts that have come out? Speaking of same day, right about the same time that you were being handed that T-shirt right there, Danny. We got a Mel Kiper mock draft updated. We got a Daniel Jeremiah 3.0. Both of them have the Arizona Cardinals taking, and for effect here, envelope please, Will Anderson. Now, there's a different method by which the Cardinals end up with Will Anderson based on these latest mock drafts. And I got to say, I like the looks of Mel Kiper and the way he thinks, because according to Mel Kiper, the Arizona Cardinals will trade down from 3 to 4 and make the Indianapolis Colts pay with a second and third. And then the QBs will go 1, 2, 3 in this draft, and the Arizona Cardinals will get their guy in Will Anderson, plus a second and third round pick from Indianapolis, which is a high second and a high third.
My two questions, second and third, are for this year.
I don't think he gets that specific in it.
So what quarterback does he have the Colts taking?
Will Levis goes number 3 overall to the Indianapolis Colts. And so, which is interesting because there's another mock out there, and I think it was Daniel Jeremiah that has at number 4 the Colts going with Anthony Richardson because he's a, quote, supercharged version of Jalen Hurts that Shane Steichen was just dealing with in Philadelphia.
I'm curious, like, is I haven't seen Mel's draft yet. Where does he have Richardson going? Did you see that?
Mel has Richardson going to the Cardinals at 4 after they pulled.
Oh, you mean the Colts?
The Colts. No, Richardson goes. The Colts trade with the Cardinals 3-4.
Oh, I thought you said Levis. I thought I heard Levis.
Levis. All right, wait a minute. I think
how many drinks have we had today?
No, I think you turned it around. Mel Kiper has the Colts taking Will Levis 3. It's Daniel Jeremiah.
Oh, that's where
that
I
has
meant.
The Colts taking Anthony Richardson.
So, okay, so where does Mel have Richardson going?
That I don't know. That I'm not exactly
because
sure.
that's the one that I'm really fascinated about. Like if Levis indeed goes ahead of Richardson, because they're both kind of in that same boat. This incredible physical talents that nobody's sure how that's going to translate given how few snaps they took on the college level.
Right. And so, in fact, here it is right here. And I think there was Daniel Jeremiah, but it's NFL.com. And they're talking about Chris Ballard and as much as he might appreciate Will Levis's toughness and confidence, right, and the big arm and all that, that they view Jalen Hurts as a supercharged. They view Anthony Richardson as a supercharged version of Jalen Hurts. So there you go. Either way, the Cardinals end up with Will Anderson. And that's sort of my takeaway on this one. I mean, can we pencil this in, guys? I mean, how close are we to penciling in Will Anderson as an Arizona Cardinal this season?
Doesn't it feel like that's the pick if they stay at 3? Now the question is, are they still at 3?
Yeah.
I mean, that's what it feels like at this point.
Because something else that has come out recently is that the Raiders had serious talks with the Bears for number 1 overall. So could the Raiders be that team that comes up to number 3, which would obviously send the Cardinals down to number 7?
Who's to say the Cardinals would only trade down once? You trade to 4. What if you trade back again and really rack up that draft capital?
Well, after you trade DeAndre Hopkins and you get a couple of picks there, then, you know, it's going to be a lot of picks, Danny. So I don't know.
What
if you
do you know, Paul?
I'm just saying, based on the other reports as of today, talks are heating up. And or maybe that was
coming into focus, I believe, was the term
that
Ian Rappaport used.
Coming into focus.
As the trade is coming into focus.
I see.
Which is just delicious wordplay. I mean,
it's sort of like the horse racer. And down the stretch they come, right? You're turning the last quarter pole. Is that what I mean? Coming into focus? Because that's the way I'm translating it.
My guess is ultimately I'm like, what does that mean?
Well,
what
does that mean? I'm going to go out on a limb and assume that neither of you either saw, or if you did, you saw it on Twitter, but didn't maybe understand the TikTok that Hop posted a couple of days ago.
I missed that TikTok.
No? Well, let me explain the trend to you.
Please. Okay.
It is, and I don't know what movie it's referencing, so I don't know the actors, but it starts off looking at a cutout of Nicolas Cage, and he looks, they're driving in the car.
It's from that Nicolas Cage movie that just came out with the dude from The Mandalorian.
Okay, if you say so. Mm-hmm. So they're in a car driving, and Nicolas Cage looks over to the driver, his friend, and has this confused look on his face. And then it goes to a close-up of this other actor who's driving the car and has this wild smile, like, looks completely, like, in his own world, like, doesn't understand. And Hop posted this TikTok, which is a popular trend. And with the confused Nicolas Cage, the caption at that point said something along the lines of when people are wondering where I'm going to end up next year, and then when it goes to the actor who has this big smile on his face as if he knows the secret and he won't say it, it's like, it's Hop.
It's Pedro Pascal, by the way, the actor.
Oh, that name sounds familiar.
Yeah, not to be confused with Zach Pascal, the receiver.
How about that? Unplanned.
But yes,
That would be a good segue, but I'm not. We're not ready yet.
Hold that, Darren. So if it didn't already feel clear enough, it does feel like Hop will not be playing here. Was my point.
I think ultimately, you read the things he said when he was on the Pat McAfee show. I mean, DeAndre said he wasn't going to add anything to the tabloid mix, any of the headlines. He's just going to read them all. But him saying that while talking about how he's reading all the headlines, I think says plenty, to be honest.
One quick follow-up question for Danny, because I did see that clip that was posted. Somebody put it on Twitter.
Let's hear it, Paul.
Just the meme itself or the clip itself is supposed to mean what? Or is it? I mean, just...
Supposed to be like a joke of like somebody asking a serious question and then the person's answer is like la di da di da, like I'm okay. Just having fun.
Right. Okay. Just sort of
Or like I'm not gonna tell you, it's a secret.
Right, okay. Well look,
if you have more TikTok questions, Paul, we can make this a weekly segment and I can explain it.
That'll be a breakout session at the end of this edition of Cardinals Underground. We'll go ahead and we'll confer and huddle up on that. Because I gotta make sure. You know, I gotta make sure I know exactly what I'm looking at. So that's good. Danny's nodding right now. Here's what I'm looking at in the D-hop market. This is just me thinking out loud. There's a lot of noise coming out of New England. Patriots fan base, they want themselves some D-hop, something fierce. Even with the recent signing of Juju Smith-Schuster as more of an inside receiver, Hop would be that outside guy, that X receiver that New England supposedly desperately needs. Cleveland, they want to reunite, supposedly, ostensibly, allegedly, Deshaun Watson with DeAndre Hopkins. But supposedly Cleveland now is still in talks with Denver for Jerry Jeudy. No, Cleveland, that's going to cost you way too much. They want a first and a second for Jerry Jeudy? Absolutely not. The Browns need to redirect their attention, says Calvisi Consulting, to the D-Hop trade market. Kansas City, why is there so much talk about Kansas City? Supposedly pursuing D-Hop.
Juju, they don't really have a number one receiver. That's
okay.
Why.
There you go.
Now, whether they've got draft capital that you're willing to take for DeAndre Hopkins is another question. And the thing is right now with the trade market and wide receiver, it's not where you would think it would be for DeAndre Hopkins based on other trades, including the Brandon Cooks trade the other day from Texans to the Cowboys. Now, I think DeAndre Hopkins can be considered better than Cooks.
But
Cooks has been more available, and he's younger, and who knows?
Does that mean you're going to stop asking me if Hop's going to end up to the Cowboys, Paul?
No, I'm not done yet. I have New England, I have Cleveland, I have Kansas City, Carolina, a little bit supposedly is in the mix. Tennessee is still out there. The Giants, now I know the Giants just added Paris Campbell and, Danny's yawning right now. And you know what? I yawn I yawn too, Danny, when I talk about the Giants receiver room. I absolutely do. The Giants don't know it, but
Why are you going to call me out like that, Paul?
They definitely need DeAndre Hopkins. I'm trying not to take that personal as I go through the D-Hop trade market and you just let out a massive yawn over there. And now we get to your Cowboys, who I know just added Brandon Cooks, but I mean, they only gave up a fifth and a sixth. So is there room for DeAndre Hopkins? You know D-Hop, I'm guessing, wants to play for the Cowboys, considering he's been seen quite a bit and making sure he's seen quite a bit in the Dallas area.
But with CeeDee Lamb and Michael Gallup and Brandon Cooks, I just don't think that's a play. I know he probably doesn't have much say, but that doesn't feel like the kind of place that Hop wants to be.
The Cooks thing ended any potential Cowboy stuff, and I don't even know if he was ever really in the mix.
Okay, so we'll come back to the big three, I say. New England, Cleveland, Kansas City. And we'll see. Look, you just need a couple of teams in there trying, you know, just negotiate up the price. But what do you think? What is your best guess as to what the market might be for DeAndre Hopkins? Let's keep in mind, it's a shallow pool of free agent receivers that have already been picked through. It's not a great receiver draft class. I mean, if you think you're a team with the ability to contend and you're a number one receiver away, wouldn't you be willing to give up at least a third? And if you get a couple of teams bidding, maybe, just like a Kansas City could give up their second, which is 63rd overall, is almost like a high third.
I mean, see, that's, in theory, that's what you're talking about if you're talking about from the Cardinals' perspective. But the Chiefs also just won a Super Bowl without a true number one. I mean, unless you want to go Travis Kelce, which they still have, the reality is it's really good to have a number one. But I think you can work around it if you have a good enough quarterback and or if you have a deep enough receiver pool. Do I think there are teams that would love DeAndre Hopkins? Yes. Do I think there are teams that would love DeAndre Hopkins, but not necessarily for a second round pick? probably, especially for the money that he's going to expect. So I think you've got some issues. The fact that he's missed so many games over the last season and a half for various reasons is something I would consider if I was bringing him in. Now, you know, so
15 games over 2 years after the whole AJ Green. Speaking of a meme, that's become a meme now. The AJ Green hop don't miss games.
Yeah,
not exactly. So, but it, half dozen of them obviously were for the suspension. So if you can be confident as a team that that's not going to be a factor going forward, then I think the question is, all right, where is D-Hop going, for what, and when? Are the off-season activities a deadline of sorts for the Cardinals? Is the draft a feasible deadline to get a deal done for D-Hop? Do you take this through the summer and he just stays away from off-season workouts and you take this into camp? I mean, what do you think is a realistic timetable to pull the trigger?
I mean, for me, I think you got to make a decision on what you want to do. And if you're going to go that long, to me, I think that then part of your decision-making has to be an option where he plays for you. And so if that's the case, okay, then I think you can go. Now, I think once you get past the draft and teams have filled out their rosters, I mean, nobody's looking to make a deal at that point. Yeah. So
I'm guessing it's a draft. You also want the picks, right? As opposed to next year, you want those ASAP.
Yeah, and talking about the wide receivers draft class this year, what you were touching on, Paul, to me it would make more sense for a team to want to get Hop to know you don't necessarily have to address that in free agency or try and force something out of the draft, and you have that settled.
Yeah, and if you're the new team, you want them with your quarterback, right, in the OTAs in April. And so, you know, I expect something sooner than later. I really do. But we'll see. Obviously, the price is going to have to be right, and it's going to have to be worth the Cardinals' time.
Although it's funny you say OTAs. I don't know if Hop's a voluntary OTA kind of guy.
That is true. Maybe with a new team, maybe. Just maybe. But you know, D-Hop's been trending on Twitter, and I guess people made a big deal about how he followed Mac Jones on Instagram. So there was that. And then there's also the Kendrick Bourne video in the weight room recruiting D-Hop. So there's been a lot of Patriots noise about DeAndre Hopkins, more than other teams, based on what I've seen. And then Albert Breer, for whatever it's worth, says the asking price for D-Hop is, quote, a second-round pick plus something else of value. After the Brandon Cooks deal, I'd probably say a third-round pick, plus maybe something of value. For example, the Patriots have a surplus of veteran offensive linemen. What are the odds the Cardinals take a third-rounder from New England and a potential starting offensive guard?
That's what I was thinking throughout this discussion is draft picks are great, but the Cardinals have a lot of holes to fill, and you can't rely on just draft picks. So if you're not going to get a second, can you find a team where you can get a veteran that can help you get by at least this year, and whether that is as a starter or as a depth piece, and get that out of the trade.
So yeah, and that is a good point. I mean, look, the rookies are such an unknown. If you're building the roster and you're Monty Asenfort and you have your depth chart up in your office, right, at least you can take a veteran offensive lineman, slide that player in a position, and at least know what you have, as opposed to a rookie. It's such an unknown. They could be ready from day one, or it could take them 1 year. You really have no clue. So there's that that's out there. There's the D-Hop stuff. There's the quarterback stuff in the trade. Let me ask you this on the quarterback thing, and then we'll move on to the Cardinals' recent additions via free agency. To me, and we've been talking about this, right? What's our marketing mantra over at Calvisi Consulting? AZ needs three. You need three quarterbacks atop this draft. Do you think we're there? Do you think quarterback? Do you think enough teams view Bryce Young, C.J. Stroud, and either Will Levis or Anthony Richardson as the first three selections in this draft? Sort of like 2021. I'm going to go there, where Trevor Lawrence, Zach Wilson, and then Trey Lance went 1, 2, 3. And the Niners, theoretically, the reason they made the deal to trade up to number three and give up the three first-round picks, or at least two extra, and then swap first-rounders in 2021 is because they knew they were comfortable with any of those three quarterbacks that they ended up with at number three. Hence, you need three QBs for an Indy to come up, for a Vegas to come up, or, you know, name your team to come up to number three overall. Do you think we're there, where teams view there are three legit quarterbacks worthy of 1, 2, 3 in the draft.
I'm going to say this because I think there's nuance to that question, because it's not just do they see three quarterbacks worthy. It's also how desperate are they to get that young quarterback, not knowing if they're going to be there. The problem you have with the trade portion of this equation is what teams would trade up now besides the Colts to get to three? I mean, are we talking about the Raiders? They just signed Jimmy Garoppolo. Now, he didn't sign a contract that's horrible to get out of, and if somebody fell to them. But I mean, the Raiders also could think to themselves, okay, yeah, there's going to be three quarterbacks to go 1, 2, 3. And if whether it's Levis or Richardson going 3 or 4, whatever, then the other guy might fall all the way to 7 anyways, because you're talking about the Cardinals are not taking one, and the Seahawks, I guess the Seahawks could. There's a lot of smoke about whether the Seahawks might take a flyer on Anthony Richardson if he happened to be there, maybe, and let him learn under Geno Smith. I don't think the Lions would, but maybe.
Maybe.
These are fascinating questions.
I mean, I'm desperately searching here. So, yeah, I mean, the Lions at 6, maybe. The Falcons at 8, perhaps. And then Tennessee. What is Tennessee thinking, right? And then you go down to, Washington, obviously they went and got Jacoby Brissett, but, you know, a Tampa at 19, that would be a heck of a move up. But you're right. There's not that many teams, theoretically, who would show that desperation. I think the two big ones are Indianapolis and potentially the Raiders, especially right. Since the Raiders recently had picks for number one overall, even knowing they were getting Jimmy G.
Now, again, if you have, let's say Young and Stroud go 1-2. If you're a team that needs a quarterback and you, for whatever reason, you think Richardson is that guy who can be that guy and Levis is the guy who's going to go bust, then there is only one other guy. And then all of a sudden, moving up to wherever the Cardinals are may interest you significantly. And the Colts have to play this game of chicken too, because if a team sneaks in, they're not going to know.
By the way, I went back to the 2017 draft just looking at Indianapolis as the ideal scenario, right, Danny? Because you want to go down to 4 and still get your guy, Will Anderson, right? So if you go to the 2017 draft, which was notable and memorable for the fact that the Bears came up to number 2 and took Mitchell Trubisky ahead of Deshaun Watson and Patrick Mahomes, right? We all remember that. And you're like, well, wait a minute. What did the Bears give up to move up one spot? And it turns out, they gave up a third-round pick, a fourth-round pick, number 67 and number 111, a third-round pick in the next draft. So that's what they gave up. Two third-rounders and a fourth-rounder to move up from 3 to 2.
The thing is about that, and to me, that draft is fascinating to me too, and I understand we weren't playing in as deep of the pool as the top picks, but that's the draft where the Cardinals were 13, rather, and they were considering getting Mahomes.
Yep. Or Watson.
Or Watson. And they were thinking one of the two was going to drop. And then what happened?
Yep.
Two teams moved in front of them and got those guys. So again, that's the kind of thinking, even though it was a little further back, that's the kind of thinking the Colts are probably going to have in the back of their head. We don't want to be sitting here expecting a guy to be here and then have him not be there.
Right. I feel like, too, the Colts, they seem desperate, no? Like, to really just turn things around, that if you're sitting there at 4 and to then have that taken out from under you, if the Cardinals make a trade back with somebody else and suddenly the quarterback you wanted, like, I feel like it would make sense for them to want to trade up and give what the Cardinals want in return for that.
Yeah. I mean, there was that stat before the Broncos made the big deal for Russell Wilson. They had 10 different starting quarterbacks in 5 years, ever since Peyton Manning had retired. So think about Indianapolis ever since Andrew Luck retired out of nowhere. How many different retreads have they had? Phillip Rivers had some success a little bit. What? But I mean, think of the different number of quarterbacks that the Colts have had. So desperation, yes, I would say so.
I mean, you don't even have to. If we want to keep this local, Paul, I mean, Danny wasn't around, but Kurt Warner retiring wasn't really out of the woodwork.
Yeah.
But this team went through some hard times trying to find that replacement.
Yeah. And would you say there was desperation by the decision makers?
Yes.
To a large degree, yes.
The Kevin Cobb trade sure fell that way.
Yes, right. I mean, you're prone to taking big swings, which can result in big misses.
I think, too, having a new head coach, that's kind of, you want to basically put all your chips in, not all your chips in one basket, but you want to go big while you're making all these changes. So to me, I don't understand why the Colts, maybe that's what's happening. Maybe there are talks trying to figure things out. But if you're the Colts, why would you take that risk to not get your quarterback?
Okay, so here's my question to both of you. Okay.
Yeah. Because right now the Colts have Gardner Minshew as their big quarterback signing.
Okay. So whoever, let's say the Colts do want to trade up. If you're the Cardinals, what are you doing? Are you pinching them for everything under the sun? Or are you saying, okay, this team might want to trade with us. It's worth it to move back one and get one extra pick.
I print out the Mel Kiper mock. I'd send it to Chris Ballard and say, Mel Kiper says we should get a second and a third. We'll take that.
I would say two picks.
You would say two picks.
Yeah. I mean, especially because if you know they're going to take a quarterback, there are very few positions that you would otherwise that I feel like would warrant that.
I don't disagree. And if you've got somebody else on the hook, maybe. But I guess my point is this. Because, again, we keep talking about the Colts being desperate and the Colts wanting to play chicken. If you're the Cardinals and the Colts are like, we will give you our second round pick. That is it. And you're the Cardinals and you get Will Anderson or you get Will Anderson in a second round pick.
Oh, yeah.
That's what I'm saying. Yeah, like, okay. You're playing a little chicken there,
like,
too.
Like maybe the Colts have more leverage than like we're giving them.
Maybe the Colts say, you take that or you leave it.
Right. And for you, for the Arizona Cardinals, that's an ideal scenario.
Yeah, we are.
That you don't want taken off the table.
Yes.
So if it does get offered, yeah, it's sort of, you know.
I think there's
the whole one in hand and two in the bush.
There's a lot of scary things going on here for both sides,
so,
I'm sure.
I could see that. Okay.
It's the old thing. Like, if you don't want somebody to call your bluff, don't bluff. Because they might call your bluff.
By the way, Tennessee. Could Tennessee be sort of sitting there and could they be sort of a sleeper?
What are they? Where are they?
What exactly are they doing?
Did you say
that quarterback?
Were,
I mean, Ryan Tannehill.
They're outside
sort of,
the top 10, right? Or are they?
Tennessee at 11.
Okay.
So what are they doing exactly? There is some speculation that Ryan Tannehill could get cut, that Ryan Tannehill could get dealt. I even have a buddy of mine who's a hardcore Cardinals fan who said Ryan Tannehill is the sleeper quarterback the Cardinals had at some point because of the relationship with Tennessee. I'm like, well, that's interesting. But
I didn't even think of that one. Well, mostly because he's not loose right now.
But I just think that's too big a name to bring into the fold to back up a Kyler Murray. That might really muddy the waters. You know what I mean? If you have a guy who's
that's a good point.
Actually, taking teams to number one seeds in the playoffs and is a proven that, that could be a little problematic for your existing franchise quarterback. As we all know, who's the most popular guy in town? The backup. So, but anyway, that's out there a little bit on the radar. Let's talk about some of these recent signees that are now official. Zach Pascal, receiver, formerly of the Eagles, and before that of the Colts. So he has a relationship with Jonathan Gannon with not one but two teams. And if you go back to 2019, 2020, Pascal had a couple of good years. He had more than 40 catches. He had more than 600 yards receiving, 5 touchdowns each campaign. Now in a loaded Eagles roster last year, he had 15 catches for just over 100 yards, 1 touchdown, did play in all 17 games. Bigger guy, 6'2", 215. So I think that checks a box, right? Do we all agree with that?
He's already the tallest receiver on the roster.
Yes, he is.
Not on the roster. Of the main players.
Of the main players
on
the roster.
Well, we don't want to, like,
that's fair.
Ignore Juwan Wims.
Tweezy, Antoine Wesley.
Tweezy is not on the roster.
He's not currently on the roster?
No, he is currently
really?
A free
year.
Agent.
Dang. Even with a tiny mic, I thought maybe he got like an extra position for the guy with a tiny mic. No, on the social media.
Well, we do have some open positions in our department, so
yeah, he was not very happy with me for doing the tiny mic at the combine.
That's
actually
true.
Yeah, he had some choice words for me.
Really
friendly. I mean, in a joking manner, I think.
You think?
Part joking.
But he's sort of proprietary. He's sort
Heath. He saw me. I was walking through the weight room, and he thought I was coming for his tiny mic job. And I said, nope. I said, if you're here next year, I'll give it back to you.
Yeah.
So, okay.
Well, it's constant competition in the NFL. That's how it works, even for the tiny mic.
That's right.
You know, there's always a Danny Sarek who's ready to take your job if you're not producing. That's how it works in the NFL. You know that much.
Did he say anything about the tiny mic flag?
No, I don't think so. I don't think so.
That was next level. Who was responsible for getting him?
That was Grayson and Kyle.
Microscopic,
the two people on my shirt.
Mic flag. Okay.
They're on my shirt if you need a reference.
There we go. Once again, Danny's going to tweet that out later, a picture of her shirt. So that's good. Okay. So let's see. Zach Pascal is on board. And then as of this recording, just came out right before we cracked open the mics, we have LJ Collier coming on board, former first-round pick by the Seahawks 2019. Defensive lineman, first rounder, formerly out of TCU. What else do we remember and know about LJ Collier?
He's been injury prone, unfortunately. He's been beat up. He never quite got to the level that you would hope for a first round pick, but he did start every game back in his second season. Got three sacks that year. And again, for a team that needs some defensive linemen,
yes.
he's got some pedigree because of his draft status, and you give yourself a chance to see what he might have. I've already seen one tweet from response from my tweet that said the Cardinals signed him from a Seahawks fan saying, if he goes and balls out for the Cardinals, I'm going to be blank.
Well, you know what, though? I mean, I think can we all agree that if you're going to take a chance on a first rounder, give them a 1-year prove it deal. See what they have. Especially
there's
if
a lot of 1-year prove it deals out there.
Yeah, especially
saw with Byron Murphy.
If they've been plagued by injuries, then okay, let's see what happens. And then you consider the Cardinals definitely have a want and need along that defensive line. So, I mean, you know what, Seahawks fans, all the 12s out there, I'm penciling in LJ Collier right next to Will Anderson on that defensive line. So, you know what, just deal with it. Okay, Seattle?
I know that when you asked the question a week or two ago at a press conference to Jonathan Gannon, Darren, about a scheme for a base defense, and he said, we're not really going to have one. Kind of feels a little different with some of these free agency signings, no?
I reached out to my counterpart with the Eagles, and I said, okay, what kind of defense did they run last year? Now, again, I've been told, actually, on questions that I had, this isn't cut and paste. Nick Rollis told me that the first day I met him. This isn't a cut and paste from the 2022 Eagles. However, I was told that, yes, the Eagles used some 3-4 alignments at times, and they did some other things, but they were in 4-down linemen most of the time.
Just the LJ Collier, the Kaiser White, that's what these signings are telling me.
That I think ultimately the base, the quote-unquote base, is going to be a 4-3.
Gotcha.
We'll see.
Okay.
That's what it was on the Eagles website last year.
Okay.
That's what I was told.
So in that configuration, where does Isaiah Simmons play? Hate to bring it back to Isaiah Simmons again, but speaking of questions that aren't getting answered at these press conferences, the base defense is one, and where will Isaiah Simmons be deployed is another. Does the fact that a 4-3 most likely appears to be the base defense, does that help us answer the Isaiah Simmons question?
I mean, could you play...
Reverse engineer it, Darren.
Can you play him at the Sam in a 4-3?
According to Ron Wolfley, it's worth a try. We'll see.
I
don't know.
Still waiting for the fullback.
I don't know.
I mean, so you'd have Collins as your middle linebacker and Kaiser White as your weak side and your Isaiah as your strong side. I don't know. I mean, I don't know what's going to happen yet. Until they get some more cornerbacks in here, I'm not ruling out what they did last year, which was essentially, if you count Simmons as a safety, three safeties.
Yeah, if you look at the analytics, he got his most snaps at slot corner, Isaiah Simmons, in 2022. And I'm not especially proud of this hot take I had earlier today in the Red Sea Report with Drew Stanton and Craig Grelew, but I'll throw this out there. What are the odds that Isaiah Simmons is traded before they ever have to make a decision about his fifth-year option?
Whoa.
That's May 2nd. That fifth-year option question comes right after the draft. What are the odds?
I have not even thought about that possibility.
What are the odds he doesn't necessarily have a position? And I threw out there another former first-round pick by the name of Deion Buchanan, who was a ball player. You just didn't know where. Like, where exactly is Deion Buchanan best suited? And if you're thinking that's a similar conundrum with Isaiah Simmons, and once again, this is complete abject speculation. This is just me thinking out loud because the coaches actually won't answer any of this. So I have no idea what they're thinking. I really don't. We have no idea what they're thinking. So, and they may not know exactly yet. And there's no reason not to believe them. They say, we got to get these guys out on the grass and figure out what they look like and how they fit. Well, what are the odds that, because remember at the end of last season, Vance Joseph sort of had a somewhat telling assessment of Isaiah Simmons when he said he's really designed to play in space. Okay, where? How? How do you utilize him and maximize his skill set?
To me, I've been thinking that the Cardinals will probably not pick up his fifth-year option, and this is the year you use to figure out where he fits in the defense. I hadn't really thought so far as you possibly trade him somewhere.
If you don't pick up the option, the only thing is if you don't pick up the option and then you figure out where he's supposed to play and you have another Hassan Reddick, that's what scares you.
See, ideally, you would have answered this question going into this May. You last season would have answered this question. That's the rub. That's what's vexing about this situation. You're like, oh, man, you really need a year to figure it out with this coaching staff. Well, you don't have that luxury. And if he kills it next season and he blows up, then all of a sudden, guess what? You're looking at potentially losing him like Hassan Reddick. The other side of it is that maybe he's just not a fit with what you're going to run. And before the player becomes a completely known commodity, then you deal that player while there's still upside, theoretically, and maybe a better fit elsewhere. That's the only thing. Because if he's truly designed to play in space, then can we make him part of a 4-3? Is he suited to play in the box, regardless of whether it's Will or Sam?
It's a fair question.
So that's just me wondering. And once again, it was my hot take of the week as to what exactly
it's interesting
might be coming.
To wonder, Vance Joseph said many times this was a player that was built to move around, and then you wonder a little bit, okay, was Vance doing that because there wasn't a place that made sense, one place that made sense for Vance?
He also had the comment he's built to cover, or he was drafted to cover the tight end. That was the other comment about Isaiah Simmons. So in some ways, he's the guy you put on George Kittle when you play the Niners twice a year. You know, the Tyler Higbees of the world when you take on the Rams, okay. But, you know, I'm very curious to know what Jonathan Gannon, Nick Rowless, what they think of him and the fact he got the highest percentage of snaps last year at slot corner and whether that might be feasible in this system. No idea. So, by the way, Jonathan Ledbetter, he also signed David Blau on a one-year. These are almost all one-year deals, are they not?
The David Blau signing is so interesting to me because now you have David Blau and you have Colt McCoy as your backup quarterbacks. And some of the other names, free agents that were not even reportedly talking to the Cardinals, but just names that had been brought up as might make sense to come sign with the Cardinals, most of them having some sort of connection with a coach on this new staff, have pretty much signed elsewhere. So I wonder if that was a huge contributing factor, or I'm wondering what the plan is. If you're not expecting Kyler Murray to be ready to start the season, are you expecting to have a competition and it'll be McCoy or Blau and that's what you're going to go with? Are you still looking to see if there's another option that's going to become available to you at some point, and this is just in case that's not available? Is this because Colt McCoy had some unknown procedure and so maybe you want to just have a quarterback to start the offseason program and that's what this is about? I feel like there's a lot of reasons behind that could be behind the David Blau signing.
Yeah, maybe ultimately by the time we get to camp, maybe there's a rookie quarterback on day two or day three of this draft that's in the Cardinals' future. Probably day three, I would think. And then all of a sudden, guess what? It's Blau versus McCoy for the backup quarterback spot. And then that rookie is QB3, especially if Kyler's ahead of schedule and you're thinking he's going to be on the field before Halloween. Okay, that could be feasible. That could be. But you're right. I mean, who's left on the open market right now? Carson Wentz and Matt Ryan. Jacoby Brissett went to Washington. Baker went to Tampa. Sam Darnold's with the Niners. Taylor Heineke's with Atlanta. Here we go, Darren. Andy Dalton's with Carolina. I know you're thinking about this. Mike White with Miami. Jared Stidham with Denver. Gardner Minshew, Indianapolis. Marcus Mariota with Philly. And then P.J. Walker went to Chicago.
Bringing back David Blough tells me that you're not going to get another veteran. If you're going to go get an arm that's out of school, whether it's a late draft pick or a middle round draft pick, or it's an undrafted rookie, to me, you've got your two veterans that you're going to have with Kyler Murray. That's how I read that. Now, I guess if you found somebody, some veteran that made sense, that all of a sudden you don't have to keep David Blough necessarily, or I mean, it's a 1-year deal. I can't imagine he got a lot of money up front. So
wouldn't it be something if the Cardinals somehow ended up drafting cornerback Christian Gonzalez, Blough's brother-in-law?
There you go. Maybe that's
why. Little family affair.
Who, by the way,
they're absolutely trading down from 3 then.
Christian Gonzalez, almost every mock that I see, is a top 10 pick.
Oh yeah. Oh yeah. Most people think he's the best cornerback available.
And if not, it'll be the Illinois quarterback. Cornerback, right? The Illinois cornerback,
unfortunately,
right?
For him, he's been banged up and he hasn't done any workouts for anybody. Mm. And but yeah, I think Gonzalez, with as much, again, he's a guy he's only 20 right now, and yet he's had 3 years of starting football in college, and he's off the charts in terms of his measurables. So I would think he would be the first cornerback off the board, which doesn't always mean anything. Jeff Okuda has done really nothing in his career.
Yeah.
And he was just, what, the third overall pick a couple of years ago?
What are the odds Gonzalez goes to the Seahawks at number 5? He has that size of a Seahawks corner. And then they have the best tandem of corners, arguably, in the NFL, with all due respect to Sauce Gardner and whoever's playing next to him. But, I mean, to put Tariq Woolen and a Christian Gonzalez together for the next decade.
Christian Gonzalez hasn't done jack diddly on the NFL level. No, and we just got through saying Jeff Okuda never did.
That's right. How dare I say that after your Jeff Okuda drop?
Jack diddly?
Yeah.
But I mean,
I want to add that to the bingo card.
One of the mocks had the kid from Jalen Carter.
Jalen Carter. I mean, hey, Seahawk fan, the 12s, you think you had issues with LJ Collier? Get ready for a Jalen Carter. Take it from those of us here in the AZ who watch Robert Kimdichie, supposedly, arguably, the most talented player in the draft, who had other issues that derailed his NFL career. Could Jalen Carter? I mean, I bring that up because before he walked in, NFL Network was showing video of Jalen Carter's pro day workout. Oh, my goodness.
Slow. He put on, reportedly 9 pounds since the combine.
He was, trailing other guys badly.
I saw
in a lot of the
didn't
drills.
Even finish drills.
Yeah, he
most
gave
of
up
us
on
lose
a few
weight after the combine.
So I know he's got a lot going on off the field, and maybe once his personal life he gets that answered and resolved, then maybe his professional life takes off. But I would be afraid, very afraid, if I'm Seattle number 5 going for Jalen Carter. Now watch the Cardinals take him number 3 overall. We'll see. I don't know. It's a complete unknown. But, man, there's a lot there that could be. Speaking of linemen, I mean, how much more these Jonathan Ledbetters are the Cardinals going to have to sign on either side of the line at this point? Are you expecting more and more of these established, low-cost, 1-year deals with just to get bodies and numbers in? I don't know what exactly you're able to do out of the get-go with the OTAs, especially with the new staff. I don't know how soon you can take the field. But right now, I'm not even sure you can get 11-on-11 going right now.
Well, if you're thinking about the offensive line, you still need a starting center and a possible left guard, not really knowing what the plan with Josh Jones is.
Yeah, I mean, I think at this point you still need a center, although Lucetus Smith, I guess, would give you some snaps there right now. And we'll see what happens with Marquise Hayes. As in terms of a guy you could plug in at guard. But, yeah, they still need to sign offensive linemen. They need to sign defensive linemen. I mean, if we're talking about practice in the summer and what you need, you probably need a few things. You probably need another tight end.
Yep.
Because Zach Ertz isn't going to be doing anything.
It's true.
You're going to need some cornerbacks.
By the way, what is a timetable on Zach Ertz? For all the talk about Kyler, maybe it's just me, but I'm trying to remember, what's our expectation on Zach Ertz?
Wasn't it October his injury?
Yes.
Am I remembering that correctly?
He said when he talked after the Gannon press conference, he said he was doing well and he would be ready for the season is all he said. So I would anticipate at this point and kind of seeing him walking around and stuff, I wouldn't be stunned if he gives me a feel like, okay, maybe you start training camp on PUP and you come back at some point in those first couple weeks maybe. And that's a pure guess. I'm not speaking for Zach or any medical professionals, and I did not stay at a Holiday Inn Express last night. But
you've been doing this long enough to take an educated guess.
I feel like he's going to be a guy that's going to be on PUP, and at some point during training camp, he comes off. That would be my guess.
Right. Gotcha. Okay.
And I could be totally wrong.
Okay. All right. I'm just trying to fill in some of the blanks on the depth chart right now. So once again, we got LJ Collier along that defensive line. Once again, I have Will Anderson next to him, and then Kaiser White playing behind those two guys. By the way, Danny, what was Kaiser White like in the TV studio when you guys did your one-on-one TV interview?
He was great. He had great energy. He was very personable. He was very friendly even after the interview, wanting to talk with all of us, kind of get to know us a little more. I thought his answers were really good, especially when talking about being reunited with Jonathan Gannon and Nick Rawlis and why that factored into his decision to sign with the Cardinals, how they bring out his best play, the expectations he's setting for himself as somebody who understands their expectations and their scheme to come in and help the rest of the defense get up to speed. I really thought that it was a pretty good interview, and I liked his answers. That's on our official YouTube channel and website and Twitter as well, to go check that out, actually.
So we had his junior college coach, former Arizona Cardinals defensive lineman Mark Duda, going back to Ron Wolfley's era. They were actually roommates in training camp once upon a time. And he just talked about the energy of a Kaiser White. And then we talked with Drew Stanton on Red Sea Report and just how invaluable those guys are. It's dog days of training camp. And he's one of those kind of guys who be like, all right, look, we're not having a bad practice today. Everybody get your energy up. He said, those are the kind of guys you need. And he sort of strikes me that way. Sort of a reflection of a Jonathan Gannon energy level. The way everyone talks about him and his game, I could see him being that guy. I could see him calling this defense, considering he comes with such a knowledge of it from Philly.
And he's been durable. He hasn't missed a lot of games due to injury in his career, and I think that's important as well, especially with the luck that this team has had.
Yeah, knock on wood over here. All 17 games 2 years ago for the Chargers, and he had a team-high 144 tackles. And then last year, 110 tackles. And he played in all the games for Philly all the way through the Super Bowl. So, look, I think this coaching staff has identified some under-the-radar players that they think have potential. Kaiser White is one. Zach Pascal would be another. You know, they're not going to kill you under the cap, but maybe they have a little bit more. Like, Pascal just got buried with all those weapons and all that talent on that Eagles team. So, is he going to be wide receiver one? Absolutely not. But if you're going to run three receivers out there quite a bit, then he can definitely be part of that rotation and be effective. So I see a method to the madness in some of these signings, I guess, is what I'm hinting at. And you got to figure, okay, it makes you feel better when coaches or personnel people have had one-on-one daily interaction and experience with some of these guys you're signing. It's not such an unknown. So they have that. What else, Darren? What else is anybody hitting you up on the mailbag these days? What is there anything, you know, that you've had to you've tamped down in the mailbag? What's going on over there?
No, I can't think of anything in particular with the mailbag. I think we hit some of that last week. There were still people upset about the Zach Allen and Byron Murphy stuff, but
well, speaking of, the Cardinals brought back Antonio Hamilton.
That's true, which will help them at cornerback. I thought Hamilton played pretty solid when he played. Obviously, coming back from the horrible burns that he had. And he's a great story, and he's another guy I think is good in the locker room. So, you know, we'll see how that kind of progresses.
I mean, if you're using three or four corners quite a bit in today's NFL, then he's definitely worthy of that third or fourth cornerback spot. He had a great camp, obviously. Then he had the cooking accident and the foot injury, and he was never maybe quite the same. And so, you know, what would his season have been like if not for that freak accident? Because that's how well he was playing in camp. But once again, if he's quarterback cornerback three or four, then he's a valuable part of the team. Cornerback two, then okay, you know, you're always looking to replace him in that position.
Well,
especially as an 8-year vet.
And especially, and again, I'm not trying to throw shade here, but I don't know if you want Marco Wilson as your cornerback one either.
Yep. No, you're right.
So, yeah, I still think there's work to do there. And I absolutely think this is, I think I mentioned this before, but I think it was Daniel Jeremiah was saying that he saw 20 cornerbacks that are worthy of going in the first three rounds. And that's usually where you get starters. So I would be stunned if one of those first few rounds wasn't spent on a cornerback somewhere. But we'll see.
And once again, it just sort of solidifies our thinking. That's why the Cardinals go with edge rusher or defensive tackle at number three overall. Now, if they trade down and they trade down a ways and they get a haul and they're out of the running for a Will Anderson, Jalen Carter, Tyree Wilson, then I do think corner, number one franchise corner, is the underrated sleeper position in this draft for the Cardinals. We'll see. I'm just going to warn you guys in anticipation ahead of next week's Cardinals Underground, brought to you by Pacific Office Automation, that I'm going to fight the bingo card with the following. I found this article in a business publication, 11 phrases that make people question your credibility, says a public speaking expert.
Uh-oh.
So just to let you know, I'm going to be tracking some of these 11 phrases next week.
Oh, it's like reverse bingo.
Not by us, but by coaches that you're hearing at,
no,
at the league meetings?
No, it's going to be from us.
Oh, from us.
It's going to be from you guys.
Yeah,
what absolutely.
What was the list a couple months ago that you gave us, but it was positive? It was like things to say to get people in the office to like you or something along? Wasn't
no.
it like that?
Was that? Was
I don't
that
know.
It was something along those lines.
I remember what it was, but
if you're listening
I thought
you happen
it was
to remember, please tweet at us.
Things you don't say.
Or say in an email.
Oh,
something
yeah.
in an email.
Don't
right?
say
like,
in an email.
Yeah.
What's shocking is I have zero recollection of
it. Oh, my God. It was great. I complimented you afterwards by saying that's the kind
so
of thing
bad.
We need.
That's just
Can
awful.
Can you give us
Are
one example of a phrase?
Just here's
one,
a couple of examples of the 11 phrases that, quote, make people question your credibility. When you start a sentence with, in all honesty.
Oh, dear. Yeah, that's not good.
Or you start a sentence with, I'm no expert, but ...
I think Darren used that one today.
I think I did.
If you finish a thought with, did that make sense?
I think I do that one.
There's phrases that include, I'm sorry, but... They say that, for example, that one right there, when you overuse apologetic phrases, you can come across as weak or overly subservient.
Where do you find
I'm
these?
Sorry, I'm sorry, but...
he's looking in high-level... Mm-hmm. Business.
Are you Googling? Are you finding it on Twitter?
Well, he's trying to
Are
make
you
himself
subscribed to a
better
magazine?
Person.
I mean, let me tell you, this public speaking expert, she is exacting. She says, even if you use the words, I think, quote, it's a phrase that makes you sound tentative and unsure of what you're saying. Oh, you two better bring it next week. I'm telling you that because
because unfortunately, as a reporter, I record all the things that I when I do interviews, and the number of times I say obviously because I'm trying to be like, well, I know you know this, but I still have to ask the question. So this is my placeholder word, obviously, right. And then I hear it, I'm like, shut up.
Well, I can make that number 12. We'll make that number 12. There are now
obviously
12 phrases that make people question your credibility. So
you're
obviously.
Just going to tally between the two of us and whoever has more tallies has less credibility.
I might have to break out my old ding and then I'll just have a sound effect. Every time you say it, it'll just ding. It'll just chime. So there you go. That's in the next edition of Cardinals Underground, brought to you by Pacific Office Automation. In all honesty.